We have our first question. My son procrastinates on his homework all of the time. And how do I know if this is just an executive function problem or if it's also relating to other underlying skills?
So, like I've been saying, this is why we recommend that students do an assessment with us, because we have to look at those underlying skills to make sure that we are dealing with the correct root of the problem. The same symptoms could have different roots, and we want to make sure we're addressing the true cause of the challenge, or again, you could be spinning your wheels. So that's what we try to determine. Kids come to us and they often have the same symptoms. And what we really do in our assessment process, not just to test kids and get scores, we really look to see where the challenge is stemming from.
Absolutely. There are so many different things that end up having the same type of symptoms. A clue, maybe, for you would be to just kind of notice, do they procrastinate more on some types of tasks than others? Or do they dig in more on certain things? Are there certain times of day that are better than others? Does reading or understanding seem spotty or difficult? Maybe sometimes we get kids that they really dig in on any kind of task that requires a lot of reading, but if they have a page of math, they're absolutely fine. So if you see some of those kinds of inconsistencies, it's probably an indication that there's some underlying things going on that are making those particular kinds of tasks difficult for them. But, as with the student I was talking about earlier, his auditory processing was so weak that he wasn't getting all of the information. But what it looked like was that he was, not paying attention, not writing things down. But there was the reason for that went back to a different root, which was auditory processing.
That's so interesting. And actually, we did just get a question about auditory processing, so I'll put that up. How is auditory processing disorder diagnosed? I have a 17-year-old struggling, and I think it's ADHD, but I'm questioning sensory and auditory issues. So, any thoughts on that one?
So, that's really interesting because often someone with an auditory processing problem can be diagnosed as ADHD because if you're not getting the information auditorily, you start to daydream or you start to do other things. In terms of where to get it diagnosed, auditory processing disorder is diagnosed by an audiologist, and not all audiologists do that. So you have to specifically ask. It's certainly different than a hearing test. In terms of getting help for auditory processing, as Lauren mentioned, we do a functional assessment or screening with students, and we dig around and look at auditory processing in a lot of different ways so that we can see functionally what's happening and then address that issue specifically for that student.
Great. And then we had a question from Jennifer. She says, is visualization related to abstract thinking? My son is often described as a concrete thinker. Is this an indicator or another way of saying he is lacking in visualization?
Absolutely. So abstract thinking is that higher level visualization. It's being able to generate something that you haven't seen or experienced. And if this skill is really secure for you, you should be able to easily do that. That is, if we read fantasy or, kind of like sci-fi, they're going to be describing things we haven't experienced in real life, and you should be able to visualize that and think about that. Or if somebody's describing a situation to you that you didn't experience yourself, you can be able to understand what they're saying because of that abstract thinking. And so, yes, we see this a lot with our kids that are described as concrete thinkers or black and white thinkers. Absolutely, that higher level visualization is impacted. Think about that skill. You have a mental picture, and then you need to be able to efficiently change your mental picture. So one, create something that you haven't experienced before, and then be able to manipulate it is part of a high level visualization.
Definitely. And then we had a question from Elizabeth. What can be done to improve working memory and processing speed in a highly gifted child, if that makes a difference?
Well, there is not a quick answer to that, but I will tell you, with working memory, using some of those tools that Lauren was talking about with visual and verbal inner language, I mean, those are key aspects. Those are working memory. I mean, that's the essence of it, that you are able to hold something in your mind while more information is coming in, and then be able to put that together, decide what to focus on. And so, you know, working with those skills is a very, very good way to start to work with working memory. And that calendar exercise that Lauren was doing on the wall, that's really great. I mean, it's working with mental manipulation and flexibility, but it's also solidifying memory, because you're anchoring it, you're pointing to it, you're locating it somewhere. So those are great techniques to work on that. I'll tell you a fun thing to work on speed a little bit, just to get used to it. If you have a child who just tends to be sort of a slow mover, you might play with the idea of speeding up by taking a deck of cards and just having them deal out the deck of cards, and then kind of talk about how fast that felt and see if we could just crank that up just a little bit and do it again, but do it a little bit faster, and start to build the feeling of a little bit more urgency. So that's just sort of a fun thing to do if you have a child that is just sort of a slow mover.
We call that aces, faces, odds, and evens. So, yeah. And it's fun. We play at the Learning Center. And so what you're doing is you're making four piles. You have the cards, child has the card in their hand, upside down the deck, and flips it over. Is it an ace? Is it a face card? Is it an odd card? Or is it an even card? And you put it in a pile. And so they're doing something where they have to work with information instantly, mm-hmm. and be able to respond quickly. And we time them and we see, can they beat their time? And so that's just a fun way that we go after processing speed in a game-like format. It might not even be in a student's programming. It's something we can do as a break, but it feels challenging. And then we do work with processing speed at our learning center. We have a few programs that work on processing speed. But it does take development. It does involve a lot of timing and speed regulation and just really working with the timing center of the brain.
And then we did have a question from Krista. She's wondering, how would you find an expert in my area to help with these skills? She did mention she is from Kentucky, and she's also open to like book recommendations as well.
Off the top of my head, I don't have a referral for you in Kentucky. I'll tell you two really good things to think about. Three. I'll give you three. One is, if you're searching for someone, you want to be looking for someone who speaks the language of neuroplasticity and working with underlying skills. So as you're searching around in your area, that's kind of what you're listening for. There is a consultant, Alexandra Dunnison. What she does is she helps people find people, connect with people that can really help them. And she's got lots of contacts all over the world. She knows how to research in your area. So she would be a good reference. And the other thing you can do is to give us a call and talk about remote learning, because we do work with students all over the world.
Thank you. We have a question about school accommodations. So it says, what school accommodations would you recommend for, I don't exactly know what this means, but maybe you will, Jill, 2E, 11-year-old boy, I don't know what the PG is, but the ADHD inattentive type, specifically for his executive function skills and deficits.
Well, 2E is twice exceptional. Lauren, is there something that pops into your mind? I've been doing a lot of talking here.
I mean, usually when, especially twice exceptional means that they do have to they're gifted, but then they also have a secondary diagnosis like ADHD, mm-hmm. sometimes mm-hmm. high functioning autism. So there should be either an IEP or an accommodation plan, a 504 accommodation plan in place. It's really challenging. If he's 11 and he might be in sixth grade, if that is middle school, a lot of times middle schools have embedded into their program for kids that are on IEPs or 504 plans, they'll have like what's called life skills or basic skills or something like that, which is really kind of teaching executive function, basic executive function skills, how to use a planner, how to think ahead about future assignments. They'll work with the child. It's usually a smaller size classroom, and it's giving support. I know we have Mona here from Futures Academy. They have their a one-on-one school, and they have that also built into their curriculum where they meet with a student and they strategize, and they really work to build executive function skills and help the student to be successful. That is the challenge with building executive function skills, is that it usually needs to be one-on-one or very targeted to the child's exact needs. A school isn't going to necessarily work with him to build visualization skills. That's not what schools do. They don't really deal with the underlying skills, but definitely take the accommodations that they have in place, but look to see if he is transitioning into middle school, look to see if that program is available, basic skills, life skills, it's called something like that. And it's an extra class that a student would take in lieu of an elective, but it really helps to support them, especially a transition as they transition into middle school or high school.
Yeah, I think at least in California, and I'm not sure if this is a state or a national program, in high schools, possibly middle schools, there's a program called AVID, which does exactly that. It's really building those executive function skills. In terms of accommodations, you know, I think it's going to be kind of those organization things that are going to be so challenging, especially with online learning. Kids get so overwhelmed by everything coming at them. And so really, what students need to learn is how to, one, get it organized on their planner. They need to know how to use a planner and get it on there, understand what they're looking at, and then they need to learn how to break it up. And so if there is, you know, that the kind of accommodation that your child probably needs is, you know, for someone to help structure, teach, and then monitor him using a planner and breaking assignments up. And as Lauren said, that usually takes some one-on-one help. But certainly there should be a way, if he didn't get everything written down, or, you know, where he can go back and check online exactly what he's supposed to do. And in just a minute, I'm going to give you a strategy, a problem-solving strategy, and using this strategy together, you could sit down and work him through, you know, how to use it. And then, you know, as long as there's a place where he can go back and check.
Great. We've got so many great strategy opportunities for people to try. A lot of people really like the card suggestion. Elizabeth was mentioning that she's excited to use this to kind of build that feeling of the sense of urgency. So yeah, she really liked that one. And then Carolyn really appreciated that as well. She's wondering, are there more artistic and game activities that can work on building this visual and auditory memory skill as well? Maybe something music related. Does anything pop out to you?
You know, if you think about the concept of what we're talking about visualizing and then being able to take your mental image and change it in some way. And we're talking about hearing something in your mind. So anytime that someone is able to, that you can stimulate them to picture something and then talk about it, you're building those skills. And so it could be with any medium, anything that you're doing, really, if you keep those two ideas in mind, and then extending it with manipulating it. Oh, what if picture what it would look like if you put green in there instead of blues and see if they can, you know, change that in their mind.
And then we had a couple people chiming in on the whole topic of medication. Tracy's wondering, what are your thoughts about ADHD medication for executive functioning challenges? If kids are taking such medications, does this impact our work with them on these skills? It's a good question.
So we are not medical experts and we can't give medical advice truly, but we will work with kids however you bring them to us. And so if they are on medication and that, you know, with your doctor is the best thing for them, then that's how we're going to work with your child. If it's during the summer and you don't want them on medication, we're happy to work with them without their medication as well. What we see functionally is diagnostic for us and we can go from there. There's just a lot to consider with attention and executive function. And the big thing is knowing, really understanding if there are other skills that are getting in the way and stressing that attention or keeping the student from being able to really do those higher level skills. There are times where medication is actually, you know, very workable for some students and for others, not so much. We really focus on the training aspect and often find that with the training, they're able to do the kinds of things that they need to do.
Right. And just to chime in a little bit, my student that I referenced earlier, Nicholas, so he was on two different types of attention medication. Attention medication might make it him less impulsive, less like emotionally reactive, but it's not going to train his visualization skills that we're lacking. Mm-hmm. So yes, you can use medication to change the functions in the brain, but if underlying skills are lacking, they need to be developed as well.
Right.
So and that's why we do the training that we do.
Yeah. And Dr. Ted Halliwell, who is an expert in ADHD, you know, he really has said that a good combination of medication and training, that you don't want to leave that training piece off because there's a lot of learning that has to happen. And certainly with executive function, you know, these are life skills. This is how we solve problems, how we manage. So we need to develop and learn these skills.
Definitely. That's a great point. We have just a few more questions and comments. One, this was asked back, I think, when we were giving some suggestions for tools we can use for students on visualization and inner language. And then we had a question from, I'm so sorry if I'm pronouncing the name wrong. I think it's Yothi. She says, what if they don't want to listen? So any thoughts on that one?
So many thoughts came into my mind. One thing is we do want to make sure that we get their attention, we use a calm voice, that we talk to them about more than just things they have to do or things that they have not done right. You know, kids, especially teenagers, you know, they don't really want to listen if all they're going to get is a laundry list. And so, you know, try to set up listening as a positive thing. You know, I heard an interesting technique just yesterday, actually. It was about taking the emotion out of words to notice some things. So maybe, just kind of in your environment, saying in your mind, there's a chair. I'm walking around a corner. I'm going through the kitchen. I notice the refrigerator is cold. Just feeding yourself some language that's not heavily emotionally laden. And then, you know, kind of training yourself as you're making pictures, because you're getting all of the emotion, you're getting all the feeling part of it, which is great. And so then as you're making pictures, to say the nouns that are in there, say what you notice, the things that you notice, the most important thing that you notice. What is that thing doing or that person doing? And consciously state it as opposed to digging into the emotion. So often with students, we have to go the opposite direction and try to build in an understanding of the emotion behind it.